If you will turn to John chapter 9 this morning. We're going to consider the entire chapter of John 9 as a whole, all one story, all 41 verses. Now, from a 30,000-foot view, it's really about Jesus healing a man of his blindness, and then the man being persecuted, grilled, if you will, about it. You know, it seems as though John spends an awful lot of his allotted parchment time here on an event that, on the surface, wasn't that abnormal for him anyway, wasn't uncommon. In the New Testament, there are several passages that talk about Jesus healing people who were born blind. For instance, there was a man in Bethsaida, Mark chapter 8. Jesus leads the blind man out of the village, puts spit on his eyes, and lays hands on him. Initially, this is the one where the man saw people walking about like trees, and then after a second touch by Jesus, he saw everything clearly. Now, Mark uses six verses to talk about that passage. And then the second instance is healing of Bartimaeus. In Jericho, uses six verses there. Bartimaeus is a blind beggar, calls out to Jesus as he was leaving Jericho, and Jesus restores his sight after hearing his faith-filled plea for mercy. And then in Matthew chapter 9, talks about Jesus healing two blind men near Jericho. He uses five verses there. This is where two blind men follow Jesus, crying out for mercy. And Jesus touches their eyes and said that their faith had healed them and their sight was restored. And then there are several passages, both in Matthew and in Luke, where it just speaks of Jesus healing the blind, just a generic healing the blind, uses one verse. But here in John chapter 9, he uses the entire chapter, 41 verses, to talk about healing of a blind man. Now, I'm not going to read the entire chapter. It's probably familiar to everyone here. But because it's so familiar, maybe we miss the whole narrative of what it is really trying to teach us. So to put it in context, let's go back to the beginning. Not the beginning of chapter 9. Referring to the Genesis account. Genesis 1, verses 2 and 3. The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. There was darkness first, and then light. And then in the rest of chapter 1 of Genesis, on each successive day of creation, it says, there was evening and there was morning. In Genesis chapter 1, verses 5, verses 8, verses 13, verses 19, verses 23 and 31, on every one of them, there was darkness first, then light. Just like in John chapter 9. This is, the entire chapter is the story of every Christian. Their spiritual life. Consider, for a Christian, their journey from being born blind, as we all start out spiritually blind, and then living a life of wretchedness, stumbling around like a blind person would, and then at our conversion being given sight, not sight restored, but sight for the first time. And then finally, living a life of increasing faith as they endure the persecution of those around them. Because when you really look at the entire chapter 9, that is really what is happening with this man here. So this narrative starts with Jesus miraculously healing a blind man. He's physical blind, but also the beginning of his spiritual awakening as well. Tells about this poor blind man. He is insightful, courageous, if you will, who not only regained his sight, but also gained spiritual understanding as well. So by the end of the encounter here, he recognized who Jesus truly was and stood firm against those who opposed him. So I want to read the first seven verses of chapter 9. As he passed by, he saw a man born blind, blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me as long as it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. While I'm in the world, I am the light of the world." When he had said this, he spat on the ground and made clay of the spittle and applied the clay to his eyes and said to him, "Go, wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. So he went away and washed and came back seeing. So Jesus explains here to his disciples the deeper reason why this man was born blind. It was to allow God to show his work through the man's healing. You know, very often we look for human reasons why such conditions. You know, why do people suffer? And the explanation that Christ gave revealed God's ultimate purpose. The man personally experienced Jesus' compassion and miraculous power, which moved him to appreciate and worship Jesus. Because we're not going to jump right there now, but in verse 38, you can look at it. It says, "And he said, 'Lord, I believe,' and worshiped him." So we recognize here that Jesus accepted that worship. So the man actually at this point recognized who Jesus was. This experience is really not that uncommon. Many people are drawn to investigate who Jesus is, sometimes by the change that they see in others or maybe even on their own lives. So this man's understanding of Jesus deepened as his neighbors, familiar with his lifelong blindness, kept asking him about his healing. In verses 8 and verse 16, they're questioning him about how he was healed. And so what this caused him, it caused him to think a little bit more about who Jesus was and the significance that had happened to him. See, faith can sometimes be strengthened through adversity. And that's what this man obviously experienced. He faced skepticism, hostility, especially from religious leaders, and they even excommunicated him, but that did not weaken his faith, not a bit. Instead, those challenges actually strengthened his faith and clarified his understanding about who Jesus was. We see through history that sometimes persecution can solidify believers' faith and their character. We see this man, his faith gradually growing. And it started, and we know this because we look at a couple of passages here. Started with him referring to Jesus as a remarkable man in verse 11. It says there, he answered, "The man who is called Jesus, made clay and anointed my eyes. And then in verse 17, he grows a little bit. He says, so they said to him, the blind man again, what do you say about him since he opened your eyes? And he said, he's a prophet, not just a man, but now he is a prophet. And then in verse 38 is where he, as I just read, that he worshiped him. So he saw him as divine. So he went from a man to a prophet to God in just these few verses. So each step built on the previous one, and it was guided by unfolding revelation about in his own mind and understanding through the different processes we see in these verses. He said, you know, we've never seen any man being, you know, healed of blindness that he was born blind. Never in their history. And he said, no man, or it reveals no man could do this. His faith is continually growing through this whole narrative here. So then the peak of his spiritual journey occurred there when Jesus finally revealed who he was at the end, what I just read there in 38 and surrounding verses. So this man's heart was already open and grateful for what had happened to him, saw not only Jesus physically, but he recognized and understood who he was spiritually. And then his response was obviously, you know, that his faith drew him to the point where recognition of his divinity and accepting him as the Son of God. So this moment of realization was really life-changing to him. He had been healed physically, which is a huge miracle, obviously. But then when he recognized who Jesus was spiritually, that is the true life-changing. So it marked the complete passage from spiritual blindness to the full light of the truth, and it mirrors his physical experience. His statement in verse 25, he says, and though I was blind, I now see, is not only a physical proclamation, but a spiritual one as well. He was blind, and now he can see. So let's kind of dive into the details of this person's life journey. From the disciples' perspective, what is it we see at the very beginning here? They saw this blind man as a living example of divine retribution, similar to Lot's wife, you know, that historical monument of sin. And they were suggesting that his blindness was a consequence of some specific sin. They viewed it as a mystery to solve. Was it because his parents sinned, or was it because he sinned? Have you ever thought about what they were suggesting? That he sinned before he was born? And it really presented a religious challenge for him based on their understanding of sin and punishment. So seeing an opportunity to kind of clear up their question, they asked Jesus directly about the cause of the man's blindness. See, to them, the blind man was just a subject of a theological debate, a person deserving, empathy. That really wasn't necessarily their question. They saw him as an example of what happens to sinners. But Jesus' response now, unlike others who overlooked the blind man, Jesus noticed him immediately, and seeing him not as a sinner, but as an individual deserving compassion. How many people passed by him without ever seeing him at all? And how many of those saw him with indifference? You know, you just keep right on walking. Probably the disciples didn't notice him until they saw the master, his attention was focused on him. But Jesus saw him first and saw him not as one that had ever seen him before. Man probably had many eyes that glanced past him or saw him, but never saw him as Jesus saw him. See, Jesus reframed, if you will, the situation not as one of retribution, but as an opportunity to demonstrate God's mercy and power. So he shifted the focus from the punishment to the potential show of God's grace. See, where there is no misery, no mercy is required. Why show mercy to someone that is not in misery? So the man's condition was beyond any help from a human perspective. But it set the stage for divine display of supernatural power. From a man's standpoint, no doctor would have ever even tried to help this man. He was born blind. They did not have the ability, and neither do we now, I don't think, have the ability without an eye transplant, I suppose. But even at that point, you've got a lot of other situations. Even today, someone born and blind, I don't think the doctors can even fix. But Jesus didn't see this as a particular problem. So this man's situation was a perfect example, opportunity to show God's grace, changing a supposed curse into a blessing. And this man had the mind that needed enlightenment and a soul that needed salvation. So this man's healing was an opportunity for a clear, observable act of God's intervention, visible and unmistakable in its origin. There was no doubt where this miracle originated. This man was known for his blindness from his birth, and the healing would make him a living testimony of Jesus' healing power, changing his reputation, the man's reputation, from a victim to a beneficiary of God's mercy. But it also reminded Jesus of his broader mission here on this earth. See, Jesus was driven by a sense of urgency, because he says there, we must work, emphasizing the hands-on nature of his ministry. By the way, only the King James Version and the New King James Version says, I must work. All of the other versions, except for like one, which is a really obscure one, all of the rest of them say, we must work. So he's including his disciples and us as well. Jesus' works, while he was on this earth, we recognize they were diverse. They were both physical, they were spiritual, and he viewed his actions as directions from God, not just random acts of kindness, you know, go out and be kind to somebody today. He was doing the work that God had sent him to do, and he was also aware of the limited time that he has, because he said, while it is day, he had to perform his earthly mission. He included his disciples there. In that mission, stressing that they too were called to work. And not just to work, but the urgency of it. See, his mission, as his time on earth diminished, grew even more and more strengthened. He didn't have that much time left. He had to work swiftly, decisively, that everyone... Remember at the very beginning of his ministry, when he would heal someone, he would tell them not to tell anybody what had happened to him or who had done it. But now, this is unmistakable. He is still in Jerusalem, and this man was born blind. Everybody knew it, and everyone was going to see it. Everybody was going to know about it. He goes in front of the council here in this chapter. So not just the people, but the religious council saw what he had done. So Jesus uses this miracle as well to teach his disciples to use simple means, okay, mud, washing, pool of Siloam. The methods that he uses obviously were pretty humble, but they were part of a greater plan, really, to enhance the man's faith and make sure that the miracle caught the attention of the public. Not just that it was simple, but everyone was going to know about it. Now, also, the man's compliance with Jesus' instructions was crucial. His faith, combined with his actions, triggered a miraculous healing, showing how God's power often works with human obedience. Now, the lessons that we would learn from this is that at times, not always, but at times, misery sets the stage for displaying God's mercy, reminding us that his plans are above, beyond our understanding. We don't necessarily know why, we don't necessarily know how, but when we see it in action, we recognize that only God could have been behind the actions. And also that it requires action and not speculation on our part. Jesus teaches that practical compassion should override any theological assumption on our part. You know, at the beginning, the disciples are wondering, well, who was it that sinned, okay? He's not asking us to determine questions like that or answers like that. We're to act to relieve suffering rather than debate how and why it happened. Christ led a life focused on doing good rather than just thinking or theorizing about the what happened in the past. What person really in their right mind, when they see their house on fire, would stop to analyze, now how did this start, instead of doing everything that they can to put the fire out? There is a time to act, and that's what we gain from this as well. So instead of wasting time thinking about the root causes of human suffering, and it's all around us, we work to ease the pain and the suffering. And there's also a value in following divine prescriptions, if you will. Sometimes the simplest acts, when commanded by Christ, can lead to great changes and followed with our faith and our obedience. Obviously, Naaman comes to mind from the Old Testament. From a human perspective, the method that God uses can sometimes seem simple and insignificant. For example, using mud and saliva, washing in the pool of Siloam, humble acts, but they ended up with a miraculous outcome. So by faithfully following God's instructions, the blind man here, was healed. In the same way, we have to trust and obey God's ways. We tap into his power, and it leads to amazing transformations. We're examples of that. In the same way, when we trust and obey God's way, we tap into his power, and it just is. The outcomes are just amazing, that, and we can stand back and only recognize God had a hand in it. So, your assignment is to read chapter 9 of John, as you do, put yourself in the position of this blind man, in the role that he was born blind, like we were. And be encouraged by the miraculous healing and the new life that Jesus gave to each and every one of us, both spiritually, and as well as the gift of life physically, and then the eternal life that is a result of God's miraculous work. No part of what we can ever do could have accomplished that. So we see this being fulfilled in the entire chapter, and recognize it is the life journey of every Christian. So let's stand, and we'll be dismissed this morning.